Welcome to Career Conversations. My name is Siobhan Murphy, a careers consultant here in DCU Career Service. Today, we are talking all about a career in the Defence Forces. And joining me to unpack this big, big topic is Captain Steve Connolly, who is a captain in the Air Corps. So listen, thank you very much, Steve, for coming on to the show and helping us unpack everything to do with developing your career in the Defence Forces.
It's my pleasure, Sean, and thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. For our listeners, we've spent lots. We've had a couple of conversations even preparing for this show, and everywhere we dug in on it, we kind of really got in around the complexity of the Defence Forces and how important it is for everyone to really understand what it means and means nowadays in a modern context. So one of our first big questions for you, Steve, is really, can you explain who, what, where and how, you know, is the Defence Forces represented and how is it shaped in Ireland today?
Absolutely, Siobhan. I'll do my very best to try and encapsulate what it is we do, but more importantly, who we are and the various branches that we have. I won't take up too much of your time because I know you have other questions for me. But in essence, the Irish Defence Force is broken up into four different streams. We have the Army, we have the Air Corps, we have the Naval Service, and we have the Reserve Defence Forces. So as you can imagine, the Army is land-based, the Air Corps is air-based, and the Naval Service is sea-based. The Reserve Defence Forces then, they're primarily Naval Service and Army-based. We haven't had an Air Corps Reserve in quite some time, but we hope to have that back in the future. And really, the Reserve Defence Forces is in no small part the backup line of defence to our active servicemen and women. And in practical terms, it's an excellent stepping stone for young individuals who have an interest in the Irish Defence Forces to start their career, to get an interest in the Permanent Defence Forces by starting out as a reservist and getting an appreciation of what it is that we do. And that's who we are. But more importantly, what we do, our primary role by government is to defend the state. Based over the three core branches of Army, Naval Service and Air Corps, we use each of our different skill sets and our resources to protect the state as best we can. We also aid the civil power. What that means is we aid the An Garda Síochána, and they have primary responsibility for law and order. However, we are able to assist them in any means possible. We have our own platoons who are dedicated for certain events to assist the guards in any way that they can. And then finally, multinational peacekeeping and humanitarian relief is something that has been a core discipline or a core output of the Irish Defence Forces for many, many years. And we have been praised at UN level for that period of time for our outstanding service overseas in the peacekeeping role. And coming back closer to home, then we have Maritime Security and Fishery Protection, which is primarily taken by the Irish Naval Service. But coupled to that, we have our own maritime surveillance aircraft, which will work on a daily basis with the Naval Service in the protection of our waters, both coastline and further out to sea. As you can imagine, as an island nation off to the northwest of Europe, there's a lot of sea around us, and there's nothing between ourselves and Iceland, and that has to be observed, protected. And it's our job to identify anybody that shouldn't be there. And if they are there, we will endeavour to track them and pass that information back to those who can do something about it. We have smaller roles as well. Off the top of my head, ceremonial is one of the roles that you'll see us partake in on an annual basis. Obviously, COVID-19 has had an impact on us where we haven't been able to participate as much as we would have in our ceremonial role. People may remember that in 2016, that was the 1916 commemoration, the 100th anniversary of the 1916 Rising, and Dublin City and Cork City, Galway, there was a number of parades to commemorate that anniversary, the biggest of which was held in Dublin. And that's, I suppose, where people would most see us our best Bibb and Tucker, and on a daily basis, we are doing the roles, as I've already mentioned.
So I think everyone's probably very familiar with the work in the Middle East, and particularly in the Lebanon. And I think we're a little bit more up to date about the work of the Irish Navy in the, off the coast of Gibraltar, and you know, in the area of immigrate, you know, unfortunately, people coming over and not so quite good boats, you know what I mean, in the Mediterranean and things like that, and helping out there. And I think, I suppose, we can always see some of the work of the Navy there, you know, supporting the Coast Guard already this week, you know, supporting people, you know, who have, you know, lost their boats at sea, and, you know, support the functions there. So it's that piece to the civil power. I thought that was very, very interesting. And I even see there on the recent Twitter feed there as well, around doing the logistics around vaccination centres. And I suppose that's where the Defence Forces really comes to the fore. It's their ability to plan and roll out logistics. That would be a key strength.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll talk about the different career entry avenues for people who are interested in joining the Defence Forces. But if you join to be a cadet, which is what I did back in 2007, with the ultimate goal of becoming an officer of Defence Forces, your core training is based around the Irish Defence Forces values. Coupled with that, and I suppose expanding from that, leadership, teamwork, motivation, those things, you are not only expected to show them in your own self, but you are expected to bring them out in others. And again, leading on to that, the whole area of logistics is something that as a Defence Forces, as Defence Forces personnel, we are expected to deliver an exemplary standard in terms of logistics, and planning something and executing it to a very, very high standard is something that is instilled in us from day one of our training. And you mentioned we had the Irish Naval Service based in the Mediterranean for a number of years during the migrant crisis, but closer to home, only at the weekend, we had a stricken fishing vessel which lost all power. It was the, pardon my Irish here, the Ellie Adolf, I think it was. Yes, that's the one. And it had lost all power off the southwest coast, and it was a coordinated operation between ourselves and the Coast Guard. And the Coast Guard provided a platform for the individuals to be winched and in essence saved from the stricken vessel, while our naval vessel, the George Bernard Shaw, was undertaking the responsibility of towing the vessel back to shore. So those kind of coordinated and successful missions are something that may not always make the news, because not to say that it's not newsworthy, but a successful operation like that, which has many moving parts, because it's a success, we don't really talk about it all that much. But that was a hugely successful mission that happened only in the last 48 hours.
Yeah. Now, one of the things, and you actually started to talk about it, it might be a really good time to talk about it now, Steve, is your own career story. Because one of the things that we've learned very much on the show is that hearing directly from the career stories and your decision to go into the Defence Forces, and I suppose the challenges of, you know, you found in pursuing the application and then in the training period, and then just as your career has developed then. You might speak a little bit about that.
Absolutely. I joined the Defence Forces as a cadet in 2007. I was quite young at the time. I was 18, which is the bottom, I suppose, the youngest you can join as a cadet. And I was very fortunate that I got in just before the state moratorium on public service recruitment, and I was fortunate to have an excellent class with me as well. There were five Air Corps cadets taken, and I was the youngest by 4 years, and the eldest was 8.5 years older than me. So my own personal challenge at that time was trying to mature at a lightning pace to keep up with those in my class who had degrees, and the eldest had a master's. And I found that very intimidating. But the beauty about the Defence Forces is everyone is taken in and is treated in the very same way for your initial training, because nobody knows anything about Irish Defence Forces life and the skills that are required for you to succeed as a cadet in training or in any form of training with the Irish Defence Forces. So at that point, you realise that it's very much a level playing field, and you get out of it as much as you put in. So I was fortunate enough to do my 9.5 months of military training in the Curragh along with my Army and Naval Service colleagues. I came back to Baldonnell. I had a year of ground school training for the aeronautical studies, and then I had a year of flight training on the Pilatus PC-9 and qualified then in December 2010. From there, I flew the Cessna 172, which is now retired, and the CASA CN-235, of which I'm an aircraft commander. And most recently, I came off the CN-235, which is a maritime patrol aircraft, and I'm now flying the new Pilatus PC-12 NGs, which are only in service now. We're coming up to a year of having those aircraft in the fleet. So my career, I've been very, very lucky. That's my flying side of it, but I've also had many ground jobs where I was stationed in the cadet school of Ankara as the attached air corps instructor for a cadet class. And I was the transport officer in Baldonnell for the transport fleet and the personnel that worked in that squadron. And then last year, I was the press and public relations officer for a year. And that was a fantastic role for being able to see what I see on a daily basis, but also taking in what everyone else is doing around camp and the wider defence forces, and trying to frame that in such a way that people understand what we do and, I suppose, take an interest in what we do and ultimately support us in what we're trying to achieve in terms of state security and carrying out our role as best that we can.
So maybe just talk about, you know, that whole, you know, that service to the state. And, you know, what is that about? Like you kind of said, like we have a, you know, supporting the civil power, it's the defence of the state. But can you speak more broader terms about that? What, you know, why do we even have a defence force? You know, we're part of a European Union now. You know, what's the raison d'etre for a defence force as a national defence forces?
Absolutely. We have a requirement under our association, our partnership with the EU to provide our own state security. We also feed into the European Union Battle Group, which is in essence a series of small squadrons or units of various defence forces throughout Europe and armed forces throughout Europe, and working together to learn and feed off each other in terms of their own training and their own expertise, so that everyone's moving forward in the same direction in order to protect their own shores. And for us, as I said at the very beginning, we are an island nation at the northwestern tip of Europe, which leaves us quite exposed. So to have a defence forces, we are that security blanket for the state when, I suppose, at a critical level, we protect land, sea and air. At a local level, we protect state services. So currently we're involved in the COVID-19 testing and vaccination program with our personnel who have set up tents, we have our own trained medics who are in conjunction with the HSE providing those services. And that is how you'd see us, I suppose, on a one-to-one and a smaller level. But that all feeds back into the big picture, which is state security, and we do what we can when needed to provide that security. And it can be anything from last year, and it's actually over the last number of years, our helis provide a firefighting capability with the Bandy bucket whenever there's an Irish heat wave, rare as it may be, but it does cause significant amount of damage when we do have a heat wave.
Well, this is kind of like forest fires, is it, Steve?
Absolutely, yeah. And you can imagine the devastation and destruction caused by a fire that is out of control. And we have a lot of properties in Ireland, rural properties that have no defence whatsoever and will need us to go in and hold back the fire until it eventually exhausts itself. But that is a bit more of a rarity. On a daily basis, we provide pilots to the Garda Air Support Unit. And the Garda Air Support Unit is based in Baldonnell, the home of the Irish Air Corps. And the observers and the personnel who operate the camera equipment are Gardaí, but the pilots are Irish Air Corps. And we also have the Emergency Air Ambulance Service based out of Athlone, which is a 7-day-a-week service, 365 days a year, and that provides immediate air transport for those critically ill patients who have had, you know, farming accidents, horse riding accidents, and don't have access to, I suppose, East Coast roads in order to get to medical facility. And that's just the heli side. On the fixed-wing side, air ambulance is something that we engage in time and time again. From the fixed-wing side, we would typically not be involved in on-island transfer, but we do have it from time to time, but we can be anywhere from the UK to Germany to France for that kind of transport. Mm-hmm. And that's all in addition to our primary role, which from the heli side of it, it's to support the Army and their function and the Naval Service, as well as from the fixed-wing side, we have, as I mentioned already, our CAS CN-235 maritime patrol aircraft, which are involved in the maritime defence and security of the state, coupled with the Irish defence, with the Irish Naval Service.
Brilliant, brilliant. When I was just reviewing the site and going through kind of the thoughts around a career in the Defence Forces, I suppose I was very much struck around the values that, you know, for anyone considering a career in the Defence Forces, you know. And we might unpack them a little bit more, because we're living in a very agile world, and a lot of our students or anyone embarking on their career, you know, are considering that, you know, they might sort it out in their minds. I'll do a couple of years here and maybe I'll go off and do a couple of years there. But then the life within the Defence Forces is somewhat different. It's, you know, it can be a job for life, whereas in other circumstances, we're trying to break that link between a job for life. So we might just unpack some of the, I suppose, the terminology in around the Defence Forces. And I suppose I was very much struck, and even though it might seem very traditional, we don't really have these traditions in other organisations anymore. It would be that sense, strong sense of duty.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to pick up on something that you said there about loyalty, something that's very different. And even in the 14 years that I've been in the Irish Defence Force, I've seen a change in attitude of those coming in behind me. Very much the Defence Forces and public service in general was seen as a career for life. And it was, I suppose to use an even older term, vocational. And that you came in and that was you set for life, and your loyalty was to that job. We still have that to a certain degree. We do have a loyalty to the service. We have a loyalty to the flag, and that comes very much by virtue of our Defence Forces values. And that keeps, I suppose, our personnel reminded of why it is that they joined. People don't join the Irish Defence Force for a job. They join it for a sense of purpose, for a sense of duty, and for something that is outside of the norm. And the beauty of the Irish Defence Forces is you can join with the intention of doing one thing, and in 10 years' time, you could be doing something absolutely different. Going back to my own story, I joined because I wanted to fly. I adore flying, and the military flying is very different to civilian flying in terms of what we can and can't do. And also, if you're a commercial pilot, you're very much restricted in what you can and can't do in an aircraft, because your job is to transport passengers from A to B, and that's it. Whereas my job, I could be doing a maritime defence security operation in the CASA one day, and I could be flying a different aircraft and a completely different profile the next. And that's just me as a pilot. If you come in as an army cadet and your goal is to become an army officer, you could find yourself, you know, as a transport officer in your first year, you could find yourself as an infantry officer after 5 years because you want to change. And coupled with that, you could be overseas once or twice in that same period. The beauty of the Defence Force is you come in with an idea of what you want, but you have the flexibility to I suppose, move with that. And the Defence Force very much supports that. We have an excellent CPD program in terms of your own continued professional development. Nobody will pigeonhole you in anything as long as you are willing to put the work in yourself. And what I mean by that is my undergrad degree is in aeronautical studies and management. But my postgrad is adult guidance and counselling, which is completely different and very unique when you talk about someone who's Defence Forces trained. We're seen as being very black and white, but we're not all like that. Some of us are, some of us aren't. But the Defence Force will take in all personalities and will push you to identify what your strengths are and give you the tools and the encouragement to pursue those so that you can do as best that you can with what you have and what you want to achieve. And those values, it comes back to those Defence Force values of respect, loyalty, selflessness, physical courage, moral courage, and integrity. And the integrity piece is the one that I suppose you don't really appreciate from day one, but it's over time you really start to appreciate it more, because that loyalty and integrity that you have for what you're doing and how you feed into the bigger picture within the Irish Defence Forces, you get an awful lot of pride and self-worth from what you do on a daily basis. And that is hugely unique from friends of mine who are working in the civilian industry, as we would call it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it's really important, because one of the things that, you know, I suppose, just to make our listeners aware of, that it is now very commonplace in organisations to have very robust learning and development plans, you know, staff development plans, you know, reviewing mechanisms to keep their organisation very agile. But, you know, that wasn't always the case, but the Defence Forces has always been synonymous with their training of their staff and developing and moving them into different opportunities according as, I suppose, the organisation required it. But it also was a lot of it was organic, coming on the way up. You know, what are you interested in? You know, what would you like to learn? What would you like to move into? So that has been a very, very powerful part of the Defence Forces. And in some respects, you know, private sector has actually caught up on the Defence Forces on that aspect of it, whereas we can often think the private sector is ahead, but not in the case of staff development. I would say the Defence Forces would be a kind of a gold standard there in, you know, ensuring that their staff are trained to meet the needs of the organisation, you know, at all times. Just thinking back to some of those values, and I'm thinking of people applying to the Defence Forces and thinking about unpacking those words around courage, respect, loyalty, integrity, and that sense of duty. Now, there are words that we're familiar with in the English language, but in the context of applying or thinking about a career in the Defence Forces, can you maybe speak to a little bit more, to unpack them a little bit more on a deeper level? What do they really mean in the context of the Defence Forces?
Absolutely. So I suppose what's very different, and obviously I keep in touch with the outside world, I'm not boxed into my career in Defence Forces. What we talk about that is that you are, let's take integrity to begin with. And I don't know about anyone else who was 17 or 18 at the time when integrity was mentioned first, but I certainly didn't really have a full understanding of it, but I certainly do now 14 years later. But it's the practice of being honest and showing that you are consistent and uncompromising in your own values. And I keep using that term, values. The reason that we use it is because when you come in as a trainee, you don't have Defence Forces values. You don't know how the Defence Forces works. How could you? You might have a cursory knowledge, or you could have been in the reserves, as I said, at the very beginning and had a taste of what it is to be a member of the Defence Forces. But in essence, what that is you are trained to appreciate where we came from, the history of the Defence Forces, and where we're going in terms of our vision, and how you fit into that, and how your loyalty to that set of goals will increase your own integrity. Because if you see something, or you see someone who is acting in a way that is outside what you believe to be in the best interests of the Defence Forces, it is up to you to question them on it and to not allow that behaviour to continue, or at the more serious end, to identify that person to someone who can do something about it. That's the level of integrity that we're looking for in our personnel. And when we talk about physical courage and moral courage, it's having that courage within you to push yourself that little bit further. Physical courage is an easy one to define, because anybody who's done any kind of physical fitness training will know that you hit that wall and you think that you can't go any further, and you've got to pick yourself up, and it becomes more of a mental game than a physical game to keep your body moving. And most people anybody who's ran a marathon certainly has felt it. But that level of physical courage to get you from A to B. Moral courage is a little bit that little bit more difficult to define, because we're talking about people's own sense of what is right and wrong. But what the Defence Forces does is it gives you those parameters. It gives you those I suppose, the bookends by which we deem things to be right or wrong and how they fit with our values and how you should adapt as an individual, a free-thinking individual, to adapt into what it is that the organisation is trying to provide.
Brilliant. So we might just go on to the actual application process. So from what I can understand, it is where, you know, it is a Defence Forces made up of the three plus the reserve, but yep. You individually apply for each section of the Defence Forces. You might talk us through the process there, Steve.
Absolutely. So to start at the top, there are three ways in which you can become a member of the Defence Forces. One is through recruitment, one is through the apprenticeship, and the third is through the cadetship. To give an idea of what it is each of those are, it's the end product, it's the end result. So if you join as a recruit, your training is significantly less than that of an apprentice or a cadet, because you will come out as a fully qualified three-star private, or airman or airwoman or seaman. It's in the naval service, and is the most basic level of training to get you into a uniform. And from there, you can move into becoming a medic, a cook, a driver, a crewman on the helicopters, a radar operator in the maritime aircraft. But you're going in at the lowest level. The next stage then is the apprenticeship. That is broken down into essentially, in brass tacks, an apprenticeship is what it says in the thing. You're coming in and you're going to be trained in operating machinery. For ourselves in the Air Corps, that's aircraft engines, avionics, and the airframe itself. That takes 4 years and is fully accredited. And that's something that I failed to mention in the beginning. Everything that we do in the Defence Forces is accredited by external agencies, most of which are third-level institutions, or depending if it's aviation-based and it's a manufacturer's certificate of airworthiness, it's the manufacturer, but it's the highest level of certification that you can get is something that we'll always try strive for in the Defence Forces. We don't just do our own courses to our own standard. We do it to international best practice in everything that we do. So as an apprentice, you'll come in with... You apply to be an apprentice and train to be an apprentice. And it's the same with the cadetship as well. You will come in to be an officer. That is what a cadetship is. A cadet is a trainee officer. From those three, so recruit, apprenticeship, and cadetship, you don't just apply in general terms. You will apply for either the Army, the Air Corps, or the Naval Service. So there's three streams, but there's also three avenues as well. And you don't have to, if you're looking to become an officer, you don't have to decide on day one that you want to be a naval service officer. You can apply to be an Army officer or an Air Corps officer or a Naval Service officer in the same series of competitions in that given time period. Obviously, if you're successful in all three, you'll have to decide prior to starting your cadetship which one of those you want to accept. But it is not a case of what it used to be a number of years ago where you apply for a recruit competition or an apprenticeship or a cadetship that you join to become a cadet and then at the end of your training, you're streamed either Army, Navy or Air Corps. It is very much decided by you from the outset. Brilliant. Does that make sense?
No, brilliant. No, that's great. Now, so tell me about like any defence forces in the world, I suppose, you know, one of the things that comes into everyone's mind would be the physical fitness required to, you know, to even get through the process, never mind the training, you know, get in the door at Absolutely. All the first day. So I see on the website that there is some guidance about the sort of physical fitness, but what are we talking about here? You're not going to prepare overnight for this.
No. No, we are not looking for an exceptionally high level of fitness, but we are looking for a moderate level of fitness for those coming in, because at the end of the day, everyone is trained to be a soldier. Regardless of what career you've undertaken or what your career plan is going forward, everyone comes in on day one and does the same level of basic training, because you have to be able to be, at the end of the day, a soldier. Mm-hmm. So the guidance for the physical fitness test is, as you said, online, but it is quite basic. And there's a run, there's a number of push-ups and a number of sit-ups that need to be completed. depending on your depending on your gender, depending on your age, that that changes as you progress in your career. But the basic standard for everybody coming in is the same. And you're right, we're not looking for high end athletes, but we're not looking for couch potatoes either, because you won't pass. It is a moderate level of fitness. And something that I should have said at the very beginning, for those who are looking to apply for the Defence Forces, is we're not looking for academics. We're not looking for sports stars. We're looking for the all-rounder. We're looking for someone who has a good head on their shoulders and has a moderate level of fitness. We're not looking for gold standard in any one, because if you're an excellent academic but you can't run a mile and a half, or vice versa, then you're no good to us, because you need to be that full package. You need to be able to think while under pressure physically, and vice versa. You need to be able to move while thinking.
Okay, well, that's actually a very good way to say it. You might repeat that again. So you need to be able to think while under physical pressure, and whilst and under physical pressure, you need to be able to think. Well, I mean, in fairness, that'd be good for all of us to be able to do all of the time, but particularly in the Defence Force, it is obviously particularly important.
Absolutely. And it's, as you rightly said, it's an achievable level of fitness, certainly entering the Defence Forces. And once you've been taken in the basic training, you're going to be training every day. So you're brought up to a higher level of fitness. So by the time you finish your period of training, you are of a higher fitness than you were when you commenced. And then it's up to you when you're qualified to maintain that. But there is time given throughout your normal working week for you to be able to train, which is something that you definitely do not get in industry.
Surely don't.
No. And so the benefits of the Defence Forces in terms of how we treat our personnel and the time that we give for advancement, and something that I've already mentioned about my academic qualifications, those were all achieved while working full-time in the Defence Forces, but I was given the time while working to be able to complete them. Yeah. So I was given study time, I was given exam leave, I was given study leaves, so that I could complete those exams at the time and the qualifications overall. And everybody has that same opportunity given to them. Brilliant. Should they want to progress themselves. Yeah.
So we have you have the application form. Then you have a physical fitness. If you get through that, you have a physical fitness 10, and then there's a group assessment day. So have you any insights to share about the group assessment day?
I don't want to give away, but
well, now in principle, nobody's listening. Tell us a little bit more. Yeah,
it's as you would expect it to be. We need to see, and it's something that's only been part of the recruitment process in the last 6 or 7 years. If you're in a 1-to-1, so not to skip ahead slightly, but the final stage, certainly for the cadetship, is an interview with a board, usually 3 to possibly 5 people, and that's you on your own presenting yourself to those 3 to 5 people. That's only one way that you can gauge someone, and both their personality and what they have to offer. But not everyone can present themselves easily in that 1-to-1 setting, and it can be quite difficult for someone who is quite good to present themselves in that way. And if you're talking about the age profile of those that we take in, you know, late teens, early 20s. Many people haven't had that experience of an interview setting. So the group assessment, to go back a stage, is a great identifier to us assessing potential candidates of how they interact in the group setting. And I've already listed the Defence Force values, but it comes back to
top hint
teamwork.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. the way in which you interact with other people as a group is hugely important, because that is how you will be expected to behave and to treat others. So if we see an overly aggressive bully type individual in the group setting, then that is a red flag for us. If we see someone who is quite meek and reserved, not necessarily in a bad way, but isn't getting their point across because you have a bully in the group, then maybe we'll change the groups up a little bit and see if that person can come out of their shell just with that louder, brash individual removed from the situation. So really, the best advice I can give is that, and I say to anybody, the website is a fantastic tool for information. Anything that is going to be asked of you in an interview situation can be found on the website. What we do, who we are, the roles that we play, and and the values that we uphold. It's all on the website. So if you really are an applicant strongly considering going for the Irish Defence Force in whatever avenue that you choose, going in having read and understood and know what's on the website, you're going to be streaks ahead of most people who have just applied with a cursory knowledge of what it is the Defence Forces does and how we operate.
Brilliant. And one of the things I want to, we kind of touched on it a couple of times there, but we might take a little bit deeper look. So I'm always conscious of the things that you can do during your college years to prepare for your next stage in your career. I mean, your college time is part of your career arc, that's for sure, but you can kind of be looking at the next steps. So I know one of the things that we talked about there already is preparing your physical fitness. You can be doing that during your college years. The other thing as well is certainly working on teamwork projects, clubs and societies, getting involved in even maybe some voluntary things outside of the college or within the college as well, kind of speaking to that kind of engagement and liaison and coordinating with other people. But the other thing I'd like to really talk about is the Army Reserves. And, you know, I know that the applications aren't open at the moment, but I know hopefully in time they'll reopen again. But can you tell me a little bit about the Army Reserves?
Absolutely. And just to pick up on what you were saying there about preparing yourself, and you're absolutely right. Physical fitness is one of the easiest things to prepare yourself for, because it's written down in black and white what the past requirements are to get into Defence Forces. But it's that's only one small aspect of getting, or should I say, being successful with the process. As an individual, something that will be expected if someone is successful in making it to a final interview, they will be expected to tell their own story and how it is applicable to them as the applicant going in to the Irish Defence Forces, and does their story reflect the values that we are trying to uphold? So if you have, a great example is if you're a captain of the football team, some people may not realize that, you know, being captain of something or being a leader in something is first of all, something to be proud of, but second of all, is an excellent learning opportunity for that individual to progress their own interpersonal and intrapersonal skills, and being able to reflect on your own ability to speak in front of a group of people, to be heard and to get a message across. And all those things are hugely important in the development of that person, and I suppose how better prepared they can be going in for an interview with the Irish Defence, or any interview really, and the ability to stand up and speak. So that's just one side of how to prepare for an interview, but that's more general terms, not specific to the Irish Defence Forces. That's just in general terms. If you identify that you're a shy person and you don't enjoy speaking about yourself, then do something about it, because unless you do something about it, then nothing's going to improve. Change. And you're going to always struggle with interviews, and you're giving yourself a disadvantage. You're doing yourself a disservice, because you may be able to get the product in the job, but you can't get the job because you can't present yourself in the way that you want to. So I was a terrible public speaker in school, and I remember the first time I went for an interview, it was horrendous. It was absolutely awful, because I couldn't think. I couldn't speak. And I can only imagine what it was like sitting on either side of the table. But from that, I really had to give myself a kick and go, well, if I want this job, I'm going to have to do something about this, because I can't even tell the story, let alone make sure that the story is what they want to hear. So I suppose identifying where your strengths and weaknesses are is very important, but don't always fall into the trap that most humans do of sticking to your strengths and focusing on those to the detriment of actually improving your weaknesses. Sorry, I know I went on a bit of a tangent.
No,
there,
it's very relevant. I'm listening. You know, it's so true. I mean, we always talk about playing to our strengths, and, you know, it's very, very important to do so. But you're right. We can't, as human beings, that we recognise that there's things that's blocking us or preventing us getting on. Even getting 10% better could be just enough of a shift to move your story along. It doesn't mean you have to turn into a perfect orator. Obviously you've developed that skill, and you're well able to talk there today, you know.
Thank you very much. But
at 18 maybe you didn't have that confidence, you know, so
absolutely
it's also
not.
To you know, you don't have to be boundaried by your current abilities. You know, you can be just, if you can keep an open mindset and kind of say, I'm just not there quite yet, and maybe adopt more of a growth mindset.
Absolutely.
That it's something I'm a work in progress on. Just coming back to the Army Reserves now, what's the joys associated with that?
So in essence, I think I mentioned it at the introduction. Sorry, first of all, as you rightly said, our application process has been hindered, and that's as a result of COVID. And I'll say it now, and I'll probably come back to it again. Our recruitment is sporadic. It's not something that is done on specific dates each year, or, you know, the process itself is streamlined, but the dates in which they commence change every year. But generally speaking, from a recruitment side, the cadetship is our next competition, and that will be opening soon. So for anybody that is in interest, keep an eye on the military.ie website and our social media platforms. That's as an aside. To answer your question about the Reserve Defence Forces, it is an excellent opportunity for those who have a keen interest in becoming a member of the Defence Forces to get an insight into what it is like to wear a uniform. And it sounds quite benign, but wearing a uniform in the Irish Defence Force is probably one of the most difficult things you'll have to learn in your first few weeks of training, how to wear a uniform properly, how to march, which is in essence walking, but walking to a beat and walking as part of a group of people. So what I've just given you there is the ability to learn how to dress yourself and the ability to walk. Sounds quite farcical, but you wouldn't believe the amount of people who can't dress themselves and can't walk. So it's a good first step for those who are interested in becoming a member of the Defence Forces and want to get a flavour of what it's like without going through the full formal process of permanent Defence Force recruitment. It gives you an opportunity to garner an insight as to how our culture is and how our culture operates, so that, and for me personally as a counsellor, culture is something I find very, very important. If you fit in well with a culture, then you're going to embrace it. You're going to want to be part of it. Whereas if it's a culture that doesn't necessarily align with your own values, then it's something that is not for you. And what the Reserve Defence Forces does is gives you that opportunity in a free space to get time part-time with our culture and to see whether or not it's the right fit for you.
Brilliant, brilliant. And it is a great way to, and it could be just even just a fantastic, you know, hobby. And I'm sure a lot of people never end up going into the Defence Forces and don't want to. They just very much enjoy that aspect and that, you know, they find a way to express themselves through the Army Reserves, and it never becomes more than that. And for others, it's a great gateway insight, but a jumping off platform really for people to really explore in a very, very serious way a career in the Defence Forces.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Listen, Steve, thank you so much for today. It's been absolutely brilliant. So just to wrap up, really everyone, it's very important to have a look at the website. It's quite diverse. There's lots of social media as well. You can kind of follow on Twitter and various Insta and everything like that. So if you have a particular area of interest, either in the Naval or the Air Corps or the Army, you can follow all three, but you can obviously follow your preferred one as well. And, you know, you can, I suppose, over a period of time, you know, pick up a lot of, you know, information around life in the Defence Forces kind of incrementally, rather than, you know, trying to SWAT all the time just before an application, just kind of learn it through osmosis nearly over a longer period of time, and I suppose test your commitment and your interest and your curiosity, I suppose, for this career. Thank you so much for that, Steve. It's been absolutely fantastic.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.